initiatives that are being taken up and look at whether progress is happening, whether objectives are being met, and whether there can be, how can we make better progress. And so it's just, at the moment, we've just had a COP, I'm not sure how often, we've had, the COPs, which are these very large international conferences, and now it's trying to step up the heat so there's more communication in between the COPs, so that there's more action happening in between the COPs. So, I'll go through a little bit the draft paper that has been released so far on what's going to be in the Glasgow Agreement. So it's just all in dot points, and I'm going to read out the most important ones and perhaps comment either there. The first I'll give an overview. So the first dot point is they talk about the context, the international climate change context at the moment. The next point is adaptation. The next point is the finance of adaptation measures. The next point is talking about mitigation of climate change. And the next point is talking about financing, capacity building, and technology transfer. Then there's a point on the loss and damage related to climate change. There's a point on implementation. There's a point on collaboration. Alrighty. So, the first point, context, is that there's an importance to have multilateralism and international cooperation in accordance with international law. We need to address the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in developing countries. There is an urgency of action to keep the 1.5 degrees of warming Paris commitment alive. It is a critical decade to deliver Paris goals on mitigation, adaptation, and finance. Work should be guided by principles and provisions of convention, with a capital C, equity, common, but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in light of different national circumstances. The Glasgow Agreement welcomes the IPCC report and looks forward to further IPCC reports. Concerns about the state of the climate. There is a need for increased ambition in light of science to address gaps across all pillars of the Paris Agreement in a balanced manner. The Glasgow Agreement recognizes the importance of human rights, gender, and rights of Indigenous people. Wow, this is an interesting one. The Glasgow Agreement recognizes the integrity of Mother Earth in the context of sustainable development and poverty alleviation and climate justice. I really am curious what the Glasgow Agreement here considers to be Mother Earth. It almost sounds a little bit spiritual, like it gives a personification to the world. It also gives a gender to the world. And it also notes that the importance of the World Leaders Summit and including any breakthrough that happens at Glasgow. I'm going to skip ahead to the mitigation point. So, in terms of mitigation, there is an urgency of action towards the Paris temperature goal of well below 2 degrees, pursuing efforts to 1.5 degrees. And there is an emphasis on the importance of keeping warming to 1.5 degrees. There is an importance of responding to the science, specifically to the IPCC findings, pre-2030 action, and global net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, and the carbon budget. Acknowledged, updated, and enhanced NDCs and long-term strategies. NDCs are the national policy commitments. From each country, it stands for the nationally determined contributions, and it looks at it's basically the greenhouse gas emissions of each sector in each country. So the contribution of each sector in each country to greenhouse gas emissions, and that's reported in a national way, so it's the national determined contributions. We need to accelerate efforts to 2030 and align short and long-term targets through programs and roadmaps. Parties who have not yet submitted NDCs are expected to do so in 2022. We need to reaffirm Article 4.3 and 4.11 of the Paris Agreement, and parties are to revisit 2030 NDCs to align with temperature goal. I would like to then go to read these sections of the Paris Agreement. So it's Article 4.3. Let's have a look at what that says. Article 4.3 of the Paris Agreement says, each party's successive nationally determined contribution will represent a progression beyond the party's then current nationally determined contribution and reflect its highest possible ambition, reflecting its common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in the light of different national circumstances. Okay. So it's saying that nations have differentiated responsibilities based on their abilities. And then we're going to look at 4.11, which says, a party may at any time adjust its existing nationally determined contribution with a view to enhancing its level of ambition in accordance with a guidance adopted by the Conference of the Parties serving as the meeting to this agreement. Alright, so you can update your NDC to improve it, to make it more ambitious. Very good, very good. The NDC commitments need to be updated at least annually. There needs to be an annual high-level roundtable on pre-2030 ambition in the COP27, which will happen in Egypt. The leader-level event to consider 2030 ambition needs to happen ahead of the global stocktake. There needs to be a renewed call for submission of long-term strategies that chart a just transition to net zero. We need to look at opportunities to reduce non-carbon dioxide gases, very important, things like methane. There needs to be enhanced support and cooperation for the development and implementation of NDCs. All right, adaptation. Adaptation is of vital importance in light of increasing temperatures and increasing impacts. We need to acknowledge the science. And we're looking forward to the Working Group 2's publication in the IPCC report. We need to acknowledge progress made through the Adaptation Committee and acknowledge plans and communications submitted to date. We need to acknowledge the gap and need to urgently accelerate action and scale up finance to support developing countries. Yeah, I think a lot of needs to be happening in adaptation and not enough. That those dot points are very vague, very unspecific, and it says like what that says to me is we're just starting to think about it. Finance, capacity building and technology transfer. We need to urgently scale up finance flows to the levels needed to support developing countries in implementation. There is deep concern that the $100 billion promised has not yet been met. And I mentioned this in an earlier podcast. And let me see if I can find it. The OECD organize. Oh yeah, the OECD has reported that only $80 billion have been given into the fund to support poorer countries to meet their emission reductions target, which is falling short of the $100 billion promised. That's serious. And so we're still looking for that money. That was an outcome from the Paris Agreement in 2015. Okay, emphasis. We need to enhance access to finance, including through guidance of the climate funds. We need to look at the needs of developing countries. We need to improve the quality of finance. So increase grant-based resources, acknowledge debt burdens. We need to accelerate action to make finance flows consistent with a pathway to low greenhouse gas emissions and a climate resilience development. The multinational development banks must align with the Paris Agreement. There is an importance of public and private sources of finance. And there is a goal posted for 2025 to look at the adaptation financing. We need to enhance support for developing countries. Loss and damage. Acknowledge the ongoing and increasing reality of loss and damage with rising temperatures and basis in science. There is an urgency of action. There is a need for increased and additional financial support. Implementation. We need to move to implement and deliver information on policies. We welcome the start of the global stocktake and we need to support participants. There's going to be an update on the Paris rule book. We need increased support for enhanced transparency framework and reporting requirements. We need specific measures for emission intensive sectors, actions to transition to low carbon economies and response measures. Okay, I think this is my favorite section, the implementation. It seems like the most tangible, but needs to be longer and more detailed. Collaboration. Importance of international collaboration, capacity building, technology and innovation, of course. Look at the role of non-party stakeholders, of course. Look at the importance and recognition of work of high-level champions. There needs to be recognition and follow-up on the ocean dialogue. There needs to be recognition and follow-up on the land dialogue and role of nature and biodiversity, including forests, in adaptation and mitigation. Very interested in that. And these updates will happen in the COP27 in Egypt. Okay, fantastic. What I want to talk about next is how are the different countries going in terms of their net zero greenhouse gas emission commitments. Basically, every country is now aiming towards net zero greenhouse gas emissions in some way, shape, or form. Or on the global level, that's what we're aiming towards. There's two countries in the world that have achieved net zero greenhouse gas emissions. I don't think anyone will guess which countries they are because they aren't particularly famous for being particularly environmentally friendly, or they're not particularly loud in the international climate political community. So these two countries are Suriname and Bhutan, and they have reached net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And then I've got a list of countries, or then there's two countries that have it in their national domestic policy to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2045, and that is Germany and also Sweden. Then there's a list of countries, about 10 of them, that also have it in their policy to to meet net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. I'm going to read out these countries. It is the European Union, Japan, the United Kingdom, France, Canada, South Korea, Spain, Denmark, New Zealand, Hungary, and Luxembourg. So that's They are fantastic efforts. There's three countries who have it proposed in their domestic law that they will meet greenhouse gas emission, net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. This law has not been approved yet. This is happening in Ireland, Chile, and also Fiji. Then there is a lot of countries, which I'm going to read them all out, where they have committed on an international level to meet net zero greenhouse gas emission targets, but they haven't put this in their domestic law. So they've committed to something, but they haven't done the action yet. So Finland committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2035. Austria committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2040, along with Iceland. Then there's a lot of countries who have committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions on the in the international world, but not in the domestic world, by 2050. This is a long list. It includes the US, South Africa, Italy, Brazil, Australia, Switzerland, Argentina, Thailand, Norway, United Arab Emirates, Israel, Malaysia, Colombia, Vietnam, Portugal, Slovakia, Dominican Republic, Panama, Costa Rica, Uruguay, Slovenia, Latvia, Nepal, Laos, Jamaica, Namibia, Mauritius, Monaco, Malawi, Maldives, Barbados, Andorra, Cabo Verde, the Seychelles, Solomon Islands, Grenada, Vatican City, Marshall Islands, Nauru, Turkey, China, Russia, That's it. And they have committed in international policy to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. China, Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Sri Lanka, Bahrain have committed to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions to 2060 in 2060 in international policy, not in domestic policy. India have committed to do that by 2070 in international policy, not in domestic policy. And then the following: Mexico, the Netherlands, Belgium, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Czechia, Romania, Peru, Greece, Ecuador, Angola, Ethiopia, Myanmar, Croatia, Bulgaria, Tanzania, Lebanon, Lithuania, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Estonia, Uganda, Yemen, Zambia, Cyprus, Cambodia, Senegal, Trinidad and Tobago, Papua New Guinea, Afghanistan, Mali, Mozambique, Malta, Burkina Faso, Madagascar, Nicaragua, Armenia, Bahamas, South Sudan, Chad, Guinea, Benin, Haiti, Rwanda, Niger, Togo, Mauritania, Somalia, Sierra Leone, Guyana, Liberia, Burundi, Djibouti, Lesotho, Timor-Leste, Eritrea, Central Republic, African Republic, Belize, St. Lucia, Antigua, and Barbuda, Gambia, Guinea-Bissau, Comoros, St. Kitts and Nevis, Vanuatu, Samoa, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Dominica, Cook Islands, Tonga, Micronesia, Sao Tome and Principe, Palau, Kiribati, Tuvalu, and Niue do not have international commitments to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions to zero. That long list of countries, with a lot of countries that I actually don't know how to pronounce their names, as you might have guessed. So, yeah, I'd say that's the main details so far of the COP, and I'm going to play another song now, which is called Hidden Agenda by Kevin MacLeod, and The reason I'm playing this is because there's a lot of hidden agendas going on that are maybe not so hidden these days, because we've seen the actors play their act time and time again. Thank you, Kevin MacLeod, for creating that song, Music Hidden Agenda. Alrighty, one of the last things I'm going to do today is tell you a little bit about the Paris Agreement. I just want to read out some of the important articles in this convention. So the Paris Agreement obviously came about in 2015 as a result of a previous COP meeting, and basically at this COP we're reviewing a lot of what is in the Paris Agreement, and we're coming up with a new, better, improved, more stringent, more ambitious, more motivated version. So Article 2, which is pretty much the beginning, because Article 1 is definitions, like a glossary. So Article 2 says, this agreement, in enhancing the implementation of the convention, and the convention being the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was 1992. So it's basically, that convention began the conference of the parties, the COPs, and the parties is basically every country that signs on to agree to the convention. And the convention basically being a commitment to work together to decrease international anthropogenic climate change. This agreement, in enhancing the implementation of the convention, including its objective, aims to strengthen the global response to the threat of climate change in the context of sustainable development and efforts to eradicate poverty by holding the increase of global temperature to well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels and pursuing efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, recognizing that this would significantly reduce the risks and impacts of climate change. That's possibly the most important sentence in this document. Okay, so to eradicate poverty, including increasing the ability to adapt to the adverse impacts of climate change and foster climate resilience and low greenhouse gas emissions development in a manner that does not threaten food production. And by making finance flows consistent with a pathway towards low greenhouse gas emissions and climate resilient development. This agreement will be implemented to reflect equity and the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in the light of differential national circumstances. So that basically means they're recognizing that some countries are more equipped to deal with climate change than others, and that this responsibility should then be dispersed not only based on your ability to address climate change. Article 3. As national determined contributions to greenhouse gas emissions to the global response to climate change, all parties are to undertake and communicate ambitious efforts as defined in Articles 4, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 13 with the view to achieving the purpose of this agreement as set out in Article 2. So the purpose of the agreement is in Article 2, and ambitious efforts are in Articles 4, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 13. The efforts of all parties will present a progression over time while recognizing the need to support developing countries for the effective implementation of this agreement. So basically, we need to increase our efforts over time, and we need to also support developing nations in doing so. Article 4. In order to achieve long-term temperature goals set out in Article 2, 1.5 degrees, aim to reach global peaking of greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible, recognizing that peaking will take longer for developing countries, and to undertake rapid reductions, therefore, in accordance with best available science, so as to achieve a balance between anthropogenic emissions by sources and removals by sinks in the second half of the century, on the basis of equity and in the context of sustainable development and efforts to eradicate poverty. So saying that developing nations should not increase their poverty just to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, and that we can also use removal of greenhouse gas emissions as part of the approach. Developed country parties should continue taking the lead by undertaking economy-wide absolute emission reduction targets. Developing country parties should continue enhancing their mitigation efforts and are encouraged to move over time towards economy-wide emission reduction or limitation targets in light of different national circumstances. The least developed countries and small island developing states may prepare and communicate strategies, plans, and actions for low greenhouse gas emissions development reflecting their special circumstances. So now I'm reading point 9 of Article 4. Each party shall communicate a nationally determined contribution every 5 years in accordance with decision CP.21 and any relevant decisions of the conference of the parties serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, and be informed by the outcomes of the global stocktake referred to in Article 14. Okay, Article 5. Parties should take action to conserve and enhance as appropriate sinks and reservoirs of greenhouse gases as referred to in Article 14, Paragraph 1 of the Convention, including forests. Parties are encouraged to take action to implement and support, including through results-based payments, the existing framework as set out in related guidance and decisions already agreed under the Convention for policy approaches and positive incentives for activities relating to reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation and the role of conservation, sustainable management of forests, and enhancement of forest carbon stocks in developing countries, and alternative policy approaches such as joint mitigation and adaptation approaches for the integral and sustainable management of forests. while reaffirming the importance of incentivizing as appropriate non-carbon benefits associated with such approaches. Article 6. Okay, so that was Article 5. So it begins to discuss what are the actions to implement and support and pay for new technologies and adaptation methods. Article 6. Parties recognize that some parties choose to pursue voluntary cooperation in the implementation of their nationally determined contributions to allow for higher ambition in their mitigation and adaptation actions and to promote sustainable development and environmental integrity. Parties shall, where engaging on a voluntary basis in cooperative approaches that involve the use of internationally transferred mitigation outcomes towards nationally determined contributions, promote sustainable development and ensure environmental integrity and transparency, including in governance, and shall apply robust accounting to ensure, inter alia, the avoidance of double counting consistent with guidance adopted by the Conference of the Parties serving at the meeting, as the meeting of the parties to this agreement. So people can do things in their own way without having to join on with one of these, like, multinational, multicultural, international agreements about mitigating or adapting to climate change. It sort of says you can go it alone and then just let us know in an appropriate way what you're doing and what impact it has. And now I read point 4 from Article 6. A mechanism to contribute to the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions and support sustainable development is hereby established under the authority and guidance of the Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement for use by parties on a voluntary basis. It shall be preserved by a body designated by the Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties, and shall aim to promote the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions while fostering sustainable development, to incentivize and facilitate participation in the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions by public and private entities authorized by a party, to contribute to the reduction of emission levels in the host party, which will benefit from mitigation activities resulting in emission reductions that can also be used by another party to fulfill its nationally determined contribution, and to deliver an overall mitigation in global emissions. So in case that isn't clear to you, this is talking about the possibility of a carbon trading scheme. So it's talking about that one country can reduce its emissions and that its reduction can benefit another party. So they're talking about the buying and selling of carbon products here. Emission reductions resulting from the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4 shall not be used to demonstrate achievement of the host party if used by another party to demonstrate achievement of its nationally determined contribution. So both parties can't get like merits for one reduction. The Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, shall ensure that a share of the proceeds from activities under the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4 is used to cover administrative expenses. The Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, shall adopt rules, modalities, and procedures for the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4. Wow. That's very interesting. It's saying that the COP will adopt procedures for this mechanism. Okay, point 8. Parties recognize the importance of integrated, holistic, and balanced non-market approaches being available to parties to assist in the implementation of their nationally determined contributions. These approaches shall aim to promote mitigation and adaptation ambition, enhance public and private sector participation in the implementation of new technologies, and enable opportunities for coordination across instruments and relevant institutional arrangements. Article 7. Parties hereby establish the global goal on adaptation of enhancing adaptive capacity strengthening resilience and reducing vulnerability to climate change, with a view to contributing to sustainable development and ensuring an adequate adaptation response in the context of the temperature goal referred to in Article 2. Parties recognize, now I'm reading point two, parties recognize that adaptation is a global challenge faced by all with local, subnational, national, regional, and international dimensions, and that it is a key component of and makes a contribution to the long-term global response to climate change to protect people, livelihoods, and ecosystems, taking into account the urgent and immediate needs of those developing country parties that are particularly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change. The adaptation efforts of developing country parties shall be recognised in accordance with the modalities to be adopted by the Conference of the Parties. Parties acknowledge that adaptation action should follow a country-driven, gender-responsive, participatory, and fully transparent approach, taking into consideration vulnerable groups, communities, and ecosystems, and should be based on and guided by the best available science and, as appropriate, traditional knowledge of Indigenous peoples, and local knowledge systems, with a view to integrating adaptation into relevant socioeconomic and environmental policies and actions where appropriate. Article 8. Parties recognize the importance of averting, minimizing, and addressing loss and damage associated with the adverse effects of climate change, including extreme weather events and slow onset events, and the role of sustainable development in reducing the risk of climate change damage. Point 4 of this Article 8 says, accordingly, areas of cooperation and facilitation to enhance understanding, action, and support may include early warning systems, emergency preparedness, slow onset events, events that may involve irreversible and permanent loss and damage, comprehensive risk and management, risk insurance facilities, climate risk pooling, and other insurance solutions, non-economic losses, and resilience of communities, livelihoods, and ecosystems. Article 9. Developed country parties shall provide financial resources to assist developing country parties with respect to both mitigation and adaptation in continuation of their existing obligations under the Convention. Also, another really important sentence in this agreement. All right, Article 10. Parties share a long-term vision on the importance of fully realizing technology development and transfer in order to improve resilience to climate change and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we did see a lot of this year at the COP26. There were a lot of presentations surrounding or like outlining what technology specific countries were using, what breakthroughs had they had in implementing effective policy frameworks in their own countries domestically, and how might other countries be able to learn from that, and also how they might be able to collaborate to assist the initiation of these successes in other countries. Article 11. Capacity building under this agreement should enhance the capacity and ability of developing country parties, in particular countries with the least capacity, such as the least developed countries, and those that are particularly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change, such as small island developing states, to take effective climate action, including inter alia, to implement adaptation and mitigation actions, and should facilitate technology development, dissemination and deployment, access to climate finance, relevant aspects of education, training and public awareness, and the transparent, timely and accurate communication of information. Article 12. Parties shall cooperate in taking measures as appropriate to enhance climate change education, training, public awareness, public participation and public access to information. Recognize the importance of these steps with respect to enhancing actions under this agreement. Article 13. In order to build mutual trust and confidence and to promote effective implementation and enhance transparency framework for action and support with built-in flexibility, which takes into account parties' different capacities and builds upon collective experience, is hereby established. I'm going to read point two from Article 13. The transparency framework shall provide flexibility in the implementation of the provisions of this article to those developing country parties that need it in the light of their capacities. The modalities, procedures, and guidelines referred to in paragraph 13 of this article shall reflect such flexibility. The transparency framework shall build upon and enhance the transparency arrangements under the Convention, recognizing the special circumstances of least developed countries and small island developing states, and be implemented in a facilitative, non-intrusive, non-punitive manner, respectful of national sovereignty, and avoid placing undue burden on parties. Point 7 of Article 13, each party shall regularly provide the following information: a national inventory report of anthropogenic emissions by sources and removals of sinks of greenhouse gases, prepared using good practice methodologies accepted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and agreed upon by the Conference of the Parties. Information necessary to track progress made in implementing and achieving nationally determined contributions. Each party... Yeah, that's it. Article 14. The Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, shall periodically take stock of the implementation of this agreement to assess the collective progress towards achieving the purpose of this agreement and its long-term goals, referred to as the global stocktake. It shall do so in a comprehensive and facilitative manner, considering mitigation, adaptation, and the means of implementation and support, and in light of equity and the best available science. So I think what's really fantastic this year is that we're moving this global stocktake to be more regular. Instead of it only happening during the Conference of the Parties, it's now going to be happening intermittently. So next year, already in 2022, we'll have another global stocktake. Article 15. A mechanism to facilitate implementation of and promote compliance with the provisions of this agreement is hereby established. Article 16. The Conference of the Parties, the supreme body of the Convention, shall serve as the meeting of the parties to this agreement. Article 17. The Secretariat, established by Article 8 of the Convention, shall serve as the Secretariat of the agreement. And Article 18 and 19, these are a little bit administrative. Alright. Okay, so this was signed in Paris on the 12th day of December in 2015. And we're looking forward to the Glasgow Agreement. So I'm going to play one last song. It's called Burning So Hot by Steady Weather. Released in March of this year, so relatively recent release from Steady Weather. And I also just want to thank you all for listening. I hope this little update has been informative. This is Soil Matters. Please follow us on Instagram. Please follow us on your podcast platform. You can listen to older podcasts on your podcast platform. You can also find us on Mixcloud. Just search for Soil Matters, and please, yeah, if you're using Apple Podcasts, please rate the podcast so other people that find this stuff sort of interesting can find the show easily. And yeah, thanks a lot for listening. This is Soil Matters, and I'm gonna see you on Friday. I'm going to be talking with Marsha Rue, and we're also having a special guest, which is really, really exciting. We have a fellow artist. So Marsha Rue works as an artist, and their practice is eating edible earths. And the other guest is Michael Dakeman, who's another Dutch artist, working with a variety of materials. and we're going to be talking about earths and materials and practices and maybe also a little bit of gender. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully you can tune in. That's this Friday at 6 p.m. Ciao, ciao.
Thank you. از آن سوی شب می آیم، باری از حسرت بر دوشم، خورشیدی پنهان در دستم، آواز باران در گوشم. مانده در بیتابی، در شبی مهتابی، قصه گوی تنها من. روز و شب سرگردان در میان طوفان، ماهی بی دریا من. رویاهایم را چیدم از باغ باور، با فریب حوا می روم از آنجا رو به دنیای دیگر. پیش رویم می بینم شهری از غوغا لبریز، شهر سرگرمی ها، شهر دلتنگی ها، شهر سرمای پاییز. تقدیرم را در من بشکن، آزادم کن از جنگیدن. آیینم بودی ای کاش، برگردانی من را به من. مانده در بیتابی، در شبی مهتابی، قصه گوی تنها من. روز و شب سرگردان در میان طوفان، ماهی بی دریا من. قصه گوی تنها
von 100.000 Menschen jedes Jahr. Wahrscheinlich sind es aber sehr viel mehr. Denn man vergisst ja sofort, dass man vergessen hat. Deshalb merken viele gar nicht, dass ihr Gedächtnis aussetzt. Warum es das tut, weiß man nicht genau. Mein Erlebnis hat mir deshalb klar gemacht, wie wenig auch wir Neurologen über das Vergessen und über das Erinnern eigentlich wissen. Am Starnberger See arbeitet ein Kollege von mir, der sich schon lange mit den möglichen Ursachen plötzlicher Gedächtnisausfälle beschäftigt. Trotz Regen lässt er für mich diese Sonne scheinen. Sie soll mich davon ablenken, dass ich heute als Patient hier bin. Ich will wissen, ob mein Gehirn bei der TGA doch irgendwie beschädigt wurde. In einem Kernspin kann man das sehr viel besser sehen als bei dem CT damals in Finnland. Aus dem Scan kann man neuerdings sogar eine 3D-Darstellung meines Kopfes errechnen. Und dann auch noch reinschauen. So habe ich mein Gehirn wirklich noch nie gesehen. Mein Kollege Dirk Sander hat einen Hirnbereich gescannt, dessen Namen ich sehr fantasievoll finde. Die sogenannten Hippocampi, auf Deutsch Seepferdchen. Ihren Namen verdanken sie ihrer Form. Sie stehen im Verdacht, die TGA auszulösen.
Das sind ihre Bilder. Hier ist jeweils der Hippocampus dargestellt. Da würde man hier bei ca. 70% der Patienten mit TGA in der Akutphase kleine punktförmige Läsionen sehen können. Bei ihnen nicht, weil es ja keine akute TGA ist und da sind diese Läsionen nicht mehr nachweisbar.
Bleibt irgendetwas zurück, wenn ich eine TGA hatte?
Nach allem, was wir wissen, bleibt nichts zurück. Die TGA ist ein Ereignis, was eine gewisse Zeit anhält und dann auch komplett abklingt, ohne weitere Folgen.
Aber das sind erstaunlich kleine Veränderungen mit erstaunlich gravierenden Folgen.
Richtig. Wir nehmen an, dass der Hippocampus eine ganz wichtige Rolle spielt im Bereich dieser Gedächtnisstörung, die ja bei der transienten globalen Amnesie auftritt. Wahrscheinlich kommt es einfach zu Störungen im Gedächtnisnetzwerk, in das der Hippocampus eingebunden ist. Und deshalb kommt es trotz dieser eher kleinen Veränderungen, die man im Bild sieht, zu diesen starken Auswirkungen auf das Gedächtnis und auf die Funktion des Gedächtnisses.
Darf ich noch abschließend ein Foto machen?
Gerne.
Für mein Gedächtnis.
Gerne.
Okay.
Eine vorübergehende Störung hat also einfach meine Erinnerung an einen ganzen Tag geschluckt. Wie kann das passieren? Dass der Hippocampus daran beteiligt ist, weiß man seit dem in der Medizin inzwischen berühmten Fall von Henry Molaison. Um eine schwere Epilepsie zu behandeln, wurden bei ihm 1953 Teile der Hippocampi entfernt. Danach war seine Epilepsie geheilt, doch sein Gehirn konnte sich überhaupt nichts Neues mehr merken. Er blieb im Kopf ein 27-Jähriger. Als er älter wurde, hat er sich deshalb nicht mehr im Spiegel erkannt. Er konnte sich einfach nicht erinnern, wer dieses fremde Gesicht sein sollte. Seit seinem Fall ist deshalb eindeutig, dass wir den Hippocampus brauchen, um Erinnerungen zu bilden. Doch wie er das genau macht, ist noch längst nicht vollständig erforscht. Im Medizinhistorischen Museum der Berliner Charité kann ich mir Hirnpräparate aus nächster Nähe anschauen. Mit 86 Milliarden Nervenzellen ist das Gehirn das komplexeste Organ, das wir haben. Zu verstehen, wie es für uns Erinnerungen speichert, ist eine Jahrhundertaufgabe. Daran arbeitet auch der Neurophysiologe David Owald. Seinen Forschungsobjekten kann er dabei angeblich sogar in den Kopf gucken. Und zwar live. Ich bin gespannt.
Also hier halten wir die Fliegen. Kommen Sie mal mit. Hier ist der Inkubator.
Fruchtfliegen sind ideale Forschungstiere. Leicht zu halten und schnell zu vermehren. Und sie haben ein Gehirn, das sich unglaublich gut für die Forschung eignet. Alles drin, was auch wir im Kopf haben, nur viel einfacher aufgebaut. Damit David Owald Erinnerungen erforschen kann, müssen seine Fliegen natürlich erstmal was erleben.
Das hier ist der Aufbau.
Und wenn ich Sie richtig verstanden habe, müssen diese Fliegen jetzt jeweils in eines dieser Röhrchen.
Genau. Also, wollen Sie?
Ja, gerne.
Am besten hier drauf klopfen. Und genau. Genau. Perfekt. Dann den Daumen drauf. Genau.
Können ich drehe es dort hinein.
Genau.
In dem Röhrchen ist schon etwas Zuckerwasser drin. Das lieben die Fliegen. Dazu kommt ein Duft, den ich eher seltsam finde, ein bisschen muffig. Die Fliegen riechen ihn jetzt während ihrer Mahlzeit. Sie sollen sich später erinnern, dass dieser Duft und der Zucker zusammengehören.
Ja, das war jetzt das Experiment. Und was jetzt wirklich.
Das Verrückte an David Owalds Forschung ist, dass er den Fliegen dabei quasi live in den Kopf gucken kann.
Jetzt trinkt sie gerade und gleichzeitig gucken wir der Fliege ins Gehirn. Wir gucken direkt in das Lernzentrum, das sehen wir in diesem Ausschnitt, und sehen, wie eine bestimmte Anzahl von Zellen aktiv wird im Gedächtniszentrum, während die Fliege trinkt. Und was bei der Fliege jetzt passiert, während sie lernt, ist, dass die Zuckerinformation mit der des Dufts verknüpft wird. Und wenn diese Zellen gleichzeitig aktiv sind, dann können diese Verknüpfungen, die diese Zellen haben, gestärkt werden. Und so schreibt sich ein Gedächtnis.
Das heißt also, das Gehirn verändert sich durch Lernen.
Ja, das ist die Basis des Lernens, dass sich Verknüpfungen verstärken oder verschwächen können. Das Gehirn der Fliege wird sich verändern, genauso wie sich bei uns natürlich durch eben Verknüpfungen auch das Gehirn verändert.
Mal kurz Stopp. Das gucken wir uns jetzt etwas genauer an. Wir haben unsere Fliegen. Und denen geben wir einen Duft. Und gleichzeitig dürfen sie leckeres Zuckerwasser trinken. In ihrem Kopf passiert jetzt Folgendes. Angeregt durch Duft und Geschmack werden verschiedene Nervenzellen gleichzeitig aktiviert. Diese Gleichzeitigkeit sorgt für einen Umbau an ihren Schnittstellen. Die Verbindungen der Zellen werden verstärkt. Sie verändern sich also tatsächlich sichtbar. Die Eindrücke verwandeln sich so in Verknüpfungen.